Welcome to Torah Timecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rivka Alter, and today we will be studying Yeshayahu Perek Kafchet 28. Perek Kafchet introduces a new genre of nevuot, ones of rebuke that begin with the word hoy, an expression of pain that the Navi is transmitting to us. The first four psukim of the Perek are about the people of Ephraim who are not yet in exile. The people of Ephraim represent the Ten Shvatim, the northern kingdom of Israel, which began with Yeravam ben Nevat, who was from Shevet Ephraim. And therefore, the kingdom is often referred to by the prominent Shevet of Ephraim. The Navi turns to the crown, which represents the arrogance of Ephraim. Hoy ateret geut shikurei Ephraim. The crown and the pride of the drunkards of Ephraim. The Navi Amos spoke about this phenomenon too. Ephraim thinks their crown is so great, but actually, the Pasuk tells us that the flowers are withering, tzitz novel, so actually, it's not really so nice. They think that their kingdom is so great, but in reality, it's falling apart and corrupt. There's a lot of focus on being drunk and drinking wine, and the wine leads to their confusion. Their priorities are wrong, and they're totally consumed with physical pleasures. Hashem is going to send a strong army to destroy them in Pasuk Bet, Kizerem Barad. It's going to be a dangerous current of water that's going to topple the crown off their heads. They will be trampled and eaten up right away by the enemy, like a fruit that is ripe before the summer, and grabbed immediately, because there are not that many fruits that are ripe at that time. So it's not going to last very long. And that's how they're being described. This description highlights the exaggerated wealth of Ephraim that will be apparent and will garner the attention of the nations in a way which will make them immediately come upon and pounce and plunder them in Pasuk Dalet. In Pasuk Hay, on the day that the 10 Shvatim are exiled, there will only be 2 Shvatim left that will retain their honor. A crown of beauty and glory for them under the rule of their king Chizkiyahu. Bayom hahu yieh Hashem la'ateret tzvi ulitzvirat tifara lishar amo. On that day, Hashem shall be a crown of beauty and of glory for the rest of his people. But the Navi goes on and tells us that these two will mess up with wine. The false prophets misled the people to not fear punishment and to continue seeking pleasure. In Pasuk Zion, shagu baro'eh. They sinned against the Ro'eh, the Navi, the Nevi'im, by mocking their words. Pasuk Chet says, Ki kol shulchanot mal'u kitzo'ah, bli makom. Continuing this metaphor of drunkenness and telling us how all their tables are filled with vomit because they are so drunk and there's no free space, there's no room beyond this disgraceful behavior. Psukim Tet through Yud Gimel are full of words of rebuke for those that made fun of the prophecies of the Nevi'im. Et mi yored da'at, v'mi yavin shmu'a, gmulei mechalav, atikei mishadayim? To whom shall the Navi teach knowledge, and to whom shall he explain his messages? To those weaned from milk? These words seem to be communicating this refusal of the adults to listen to the Nevi'im, and maybe only the kids, the ones who are just weaned from nursing, are the ones to talk to, because the adults are unavailable and involved in the wrong matters. That's one way to understand these psukim. Or alternatively, do the Nevi'im think they're talking to babies, to ones who are just weaned, that just finished nursing? It implies maybe the Nevi'im were speaking in a way that was more appropriate for children, like talking slowly, repeating things a million times, speaking below their level. The message could be similar for both interpretations of this pasuk. The people, the nation, seem not to be interested and taken by the words of the Nevi'im, and the Nevi'im are not impacting the nation. So it's really a cause for frustration and failure all around. Pasuk Yud says, Ki tzav litzav, tzav litzav, kav lakav, kav lakav. A lot of repetition here. For a command for a command, a command for a command, a line for a line, a line for a line. What is all this repetition and pointing to things trying to tell us? Some explain it's a continuation of the description of the problem. When a tzav, a command, is given to them, the people respond by throwing the command back at the one who commanded it, asking if they're doing it too. If you're telling me what to do, I'm going to ask you whether you're in a position to be telling me what to do. Rashi says that what they were saying is when they were commanded with a Torah law by the Navi, they countered with an Avodah Zarah halacha, of sorts, to correspond to what they were being told by the Navi, a mishpat ra, more of a evil or sinister mishpat, to counteract what the teachings of the Navi, which were supposed to be mishpat tzedek, mishpatei tzedek, righteous judgments. So we see cynicism there as well in the words and the teachings of the Navi and what they were trying to communicate. Others like Radak say these words are offering a suggestion for how the Navi can impact the people through his words. Maybe the suggestion is to do it line by line, a bit at a time, build it up for them. The same way the word kav, which means a line, could be a ruler setting up a building, aligning it properly, doing it step by step, making sure that the teachings are not too overwhelming, making sure that they can be integrated. But again, this seemed not to be working. But we're getting this description here of maybe how the Jews were so estranged from the Torah that they needed to be taught slowly and step by step, not in a way where they were not, where it was going to be too much and they wouldn't be able to, they would be biting off more than they could chew. In Pasuk Yud Aleph, Ki Bela'agei Safa, it seems the Nevi'im are speaking in a different language to the people. They're not getting it. They're not understanding. The Midah Keneged Midah that's associated with this Pasuk, the measure for measure, is that what happens is if they don't listen to the Navi, if they're claiming not to understand to words that are supposed to be tailored for them in their language, then they will have to endure a foreign language of an enemy in exile. Pasuk Yud Bet says it's only, and it's trying to emphasize how it's only the words of the Navi that really can bring true and everlasting rest to you in the land. But again, the people are refusing to listen to the words and to the messages that can help them. In Pasuk Yud Gimel, they're told because of this behavior, you're going to stumble, and you're going to end up walking back and walking, you know, moving backwards like someone drunk does, the imagery again coming back of the excess of wine, and you're going to fall right into the hands of the enemy who is setting up traps for you, who knows that you're going to fall into them because you're unaware and you're confused. The same language from Pasuk Yud is used here again. But here it means that they're hoping for one thing, like they may be hoping for light for one step, but the corresponding step, the kav, lekav, will be instead of light that they want, they're going to get dark. Instead of geula, they will get galut. They will anticipate one thing, a positive thing, yet something negative will happen. For each step they don't take towards Hashem, the enemy will respond with a step. And it's going to be gradual. Zeir, a little bit here, a little bit there, and the result will be that they will become fewer and smaller because they were in fact taught mitzvah by mitzvah and they chose not to listen and they can no longer claim that they didn't know any better. The Haftorah that began in last Perek, the one for Parshat Shmot, ends here except for a last small section that we'll see in the following Perek. A major emphasis from this perek and this portion that is part of the Haftorah for Shmot is on the refusal of internalizing the words of the Navi, which was also seen when Moshe first approached the people and spoke to them about the Geula, the eventual redemption from Egypt. And we see, again, similarities between how the people responded to Moshe and how the people respond in general to the Nevi'im in this generation at the time of Yeshayahu. Pasuk Yudalid is directed to the leaders who are mocking as well. Because you don't want to listen, I'm going to make you listen. These leaders in Yerushalayim seem to be praising the way they're leading the people. But of course, again, we're emphasizing here that they are misguided and they are living in an alternate reality from what's really happening. In Pasuk Tedvav, they say, Karatnu Brit et Mavet. They have figured it out. They said, we made a brit, a covenant with the Malach HaMavet, with the angel of death that won't harm us. They think that they have put themselves in a protective bubble. What this actually means is they made alliances with other countries to protect them from common enemies. We've talked about this before, and we'll talk about it in some of the prakim coming up as well. But we know that Yehuda aligned itself with Egypt against Ashur, but it was based on false promises and things that are going to fall apart and not pan out. Yet these leaders think that these strategies will work. They're patting themselves on the back. And they think that Yehuda is going to be saved, as the pasuk says, from the overflowing stream of the enemy. The Navi again calls these strategies lies in pasuk Tedvav. In pasuk Tetzayin, Hashem says, therefore, he's established a stone in Yerushalayim to rely on, a stone that has been tried and tested and can serve as a foundation stone. And one who believes in it will not have to leave his place, will not have to leave and go into Galut. This stone, many say, could be referring to Mashiach. That's the only thing that will save them. Or it could be referring to the king of Yehuda, who also has the potential to save the kingdom from its enemies, King Chizkiyahu. The pasuk also could maybe be informing us that in the future, Yerushalayim will not fall into the hands of Sanchirev, even though there will be attempts to do so. In pasuk Yedzayin, we're told the reason Yerushalayim will stand is because of Mishpat. The tzara of the enemies is compared to barad, to hail, that you will not be able to prevent, though, if you rely on false things. So there's the discussion of the things that we should be seeking and are everlasting and the mishpat versus relying on the things that are not everlasting. In Psukim Yud Chet and Yud Tet, we're told the words of the Navi are that the treaty with death and the overconfidence is going to be nullified. You will be overcome by the enemy and trampled. The enemy will come many times, on many mornings, and it will be during the light when you will see how closely they are approaching and you'll have that apprehension. Pasuk Chaf reflects back to Pasuk Yudbet, where they were told that listening to the Navi is the only thing to bring them rest. And the Midah Keneged Midah in Pasuk Chaf here is that now you won't be able to find Menucha, not from laying down, not from a blanket that you would put on top of you. It talks about the bed that you may want to lay on being too short or too narrow. The Midrash says this is talking about when the kingdom of Yehuda actually brings Avodah Zarah into the Mikdash, its complex itself. The Mikdash is not spiritually able to find space to contain both Hashem's presence and that of the idol. The word tsara in this pasuk can have a double entendre. It can mean narrow, as I just mentioned, but it also can mean tsara from the word rival, sometimes used to refer to infidelity, or in this case, when the Jews leave Hashem and turn to idols. And that again, Hashem will not withstand that happening in the Mikdash. In pasuk Chaf Aleph, ki kehar pratzim yakum Hashem, ke'emek begivon yirgaz, la'asot ma'asehu zar ma'asehu. Hashem will arise through the moving of the mountains. Like the valley in Givon, he will be angered to perform his deed. Strange is his deed. An interesting pasuk that can be interpreted in a few different ways. The punishment of an earthquake that's being described here, har pratzim, the breaking of the earth, could remind us of the punishment inflicted upon the people in the future during the time of Uzziyahu with the ra'ash, with the earthquake, back in Melachim Bet, when the Mikdash was violated. The Radak and others look at this pasuk as referring to victories performed by Hashem in the past. Baal Pratzim was the location of David HaMelech's first victory as king over the Plishtim when he finally gained independent rule in Yerushalayim. And the famous war of Yoshua fought in Emek Givon when the sun stood still. In these cases, Hashem defeated our enemies in miraculous and significant ways. Yet here, these battles are being conjured up to inform how Hashem will cause us to be the ones to fall, the opposite of how he likes to operate. And that is why it's referred to as zarim, as strange actions, not the usual way that Hashem relates to us. In Pasuk Chaf Bet, the nation is told not to scorn the words of Hashem, so Hashem does not need to completely destroy them. Yeshayahu says that kala v'nechratza shamati me'et Hashem. He has heard that there could be a complete destruction. It all hinges on them, on the people, and will be according to their deeds. This perek ends with two mishalim, two parables. He tells them to listen closely, using similar language of ha'azinu and shim'u, as was seen back in perek aleph of the Sefer. The first is someone who plows his field in order to plant. There's a point when he finishes the plow and starts to plant and scatters seeds in different sections. It discusses in the Pesukim the five different types of grains mentioned and how they're planted, the main staples that a person needs to live. The Nimshal in Pasuk Chafav is that the plowing represents rebuke of the Navi, the poking of holes in their behavior, just like the poking of holes in the earth. Just as the plowing is a means to an end and does not go on forever, with planting being the next step. The Navi does not rebuke forever if nothing is accomplished. It's not enough just to open the soil. You need to plant. And at a certain point, it may be determined that they need Yisurim. They need to suffer in some way. They need to receive some punishments in order for them to be open to listening to these words of rebuke. V'yisro l'mishpat, which means from the word yisro, yisurim, that yisurim may be needed in order to have things end up in a positive way. We can also learn from this about the need to not only listen and learn, but to do. At a certain point, we need to focus on the doing. That's the goal. The words of the Navi are meant to be practical and make a difference in the spiritual state of the people. The second mashal begins in Pasuk Chaf Zayin. Some seeds, like ketzach and kamon, which are certain types of cumin seeds, need to be beaten. They can't be threshed with gentler instruments. Everything needs to be ground and threshed in the way, every seed needs to be ground and threshed in the way appropriate for it. Man can witness Chachmat Elokim in the way that each plant needs to be treated and the intricacies of nature. And the Nimshal, the explanation told to us in the last Pasuk of the Perek, Pasuk Chavtet, is that Hashem, He flee Eitzah, He gdil Tushia. He gives awesome counsel and made great wisdom. Hashem punishes and relates to each person according to what is appropriate for them through the Nevi'im. This comes as a response to the people of a generation who felt that the punishments the Nevi'im were communicating were too harsh, were contained messages that no one could withstand, totally unrelatable, and were just loading punishment upon punishment. The message here is if you're easily destroyed, Hashem would not test you with harsh afflictions, just like the different grains need to be treated differently. Yet too much threshing and punishment also may not do good. So at a certain point, it can destroy the grain. When the words of the Navi become useless because they're not able to effectuate change and they cause the people to disregard and continue sinning, they're not working. So we end this perek noting many of the failures of this time, mostly in the hands of the leadership, and possible lessons for how to better influence people, not just in Yeshayahu's time, but timeless lessons for all generations. Thank you for studying together Li'ilui Nishmat Riva Schwab, Rivka Bat Alexander Sender.